Arcane Sorcerer. Larcano Incantatore.
Larcano Incantatore.
Willow, what can you tell me about Poopy Avadi?
He's a nice
Poopy
guy.
Poopy Avadi.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, how is he? A nice guy. Is
how,
he?
How is he? I don't know. Is he a nice guy? I've spoken to him recently.
How do you know he's a nice guy?
I don't know. You said
I mentioned it to you.
Poopy Avadi.
Today we are watching... Oh, it's I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time. It's Del Toro time, and we are back with the Ecstasy of Influence. This week's movie is 1996's...
The Arcane Sorcerer.
L'Arcano Incantatore, an Italian film by Poopy Avadi, Giuseppe Avadi, who does go by the nickname Poopy. He's an 80-some-year-old man. He's still alive. He's still making movies. He makes like a movie a year.
Good.
And this is one of his not as well-known movies. His two most famous films are The House of the Laughing Windows and Zedare, both of which I've seen.
Yes.
Very good movies. But
those can't remember which one is which, though.
We can't remember which one is which. One of them's about one thing, one of them's about the other. But those movies were both from the late 70s, early 80s, very early 80s, that era of Italian horror and filmmaking. And so this movie's from the mid-90s. He's done many movies in between those and this. This was, I believe, his return to the genre, horror. And it's impossible to find this movie.
It is.
It is very much impossible. In fact, I had to buy, in order to watch it, I had to buy the Italian DVD, which is the only DVD of it in existence. It's an Italian DVD. It's not in high def or anything. It doesn't even have English subtitles, so I had to download English subtitles online for us to watch this movie. So... the work I put in
it's
to
like,
watch this.
Was it House of the Beehive?
Spirit of the
Spirit
Beehive?
Of the Beehive.
Yes.
It's like that one.
Except Spirit of the Beehive, I believe I just ended up buying the Criterion edition. Mm-hmm. And this, I'm like, I had to order this from Italy. I had to go on Italian Amazon. And do you know what happens when you go on Italian Amazon? You get put on a list.
The Italian list.
See right there. Poopy.
Am I really quiet?
Avadi. You're really quiet in real life.
I mean, yeah, but like on the microphone, like in a detrimental
Willow
way.
On the microphone.
Am I quiet?
Yes. But, you know, I can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
So are you ready to watch The Arcane Sorcerer, L'Arcano Incantatore?
It's actually, what was it, The Arcane Enchanter?
The Arcane Enchanter. Oh, yeah, you'll find this movie listed in English in many different ways. Arcane Sorcerer, The Arcane Enchanter, The Mysterious Enchanter.
We switched spots.
We did switch spots, so my head looks much bigger than yours.
It always does.
My head is always much bigger than yours. But are you ready to go see this movie?
Go to see this movie?
Here we go. We're going to the theater. Doesn't work on audio, but works on video.
Most of our bits don't work.
At all. We're not amusing people. We're not entertaining or funny. We have no good insights. We'll talk about why Guillermo del Toro likes this movie, though, when we get back to you.
We're not leaving.
Right after these messages.
We're not sponsored either.
Do you have trouble poopy avadiing? I don't know. I promised I wouldn't make fun of his name. In any case, here we go.
Here we go. I don't feel like I talk that quietly.
No, I mean, you know, I just talk loudly. I'm a loud boy. Speaking of loud boys, the end. Welcome back. We just watched...
The Arcane Sorcerer.
The Arcane Sorcerer from 1996.
Six.
1996 is The Arcane Sorcerer by Poopy Avadi. First impressions. boredom.
I really liked it. I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed the movie, and then the ending happened.
It's a mysterious end. It's an ambiguous ending. An ambiguous beginning, an ambiguous middle.
I don't think it was an ambiguous beginning or middle.
The very beginning, where there's a mysterious, darkened figure crouching in the shadows somewhere.
No, I think that was also pretty straightforward.
It's, okay, enigmatic.
Okay,
an enigmatic beginning, middle, and end. It's a confusing little film at times, especially when you're talking over the subtitles.
I was reading them the whole time.
In brief, young seminary student impregnates a girl.
Forces her to get an abortion.
He's sent away.
No, he's not.
He runs away.
Yes.
He runs away to avoid prosecution by the church, who have ways of making you never want to have sex again, apparently.
That's just called being Catholic.
I don't know. I know a lot of Catholics about a lot of sex.
Yeah, but they feel the shame.
They do feel bad about it afterwards. Yeah. So he ends up being sent to a place where he meets a mysterious woman behind a fresco who takes a little talisman of his mom's and cuts the back of his hand.
It's not a talisman. Let's be really clear about what it is.
It's
a band of lace that has thorns sewn into it so that she can punish herself for her sins.
Right.
Still stained with her blood.
Catholic. Mm-hmm. So he, in doing so, he indebts himself to this woman who he never sees and who is mysterious and possibly magic? We don't know. But she's like, you got to go to this place. There's this guy. He's a Monsignor. He was kicked out of the church, even though he's still a Monsignor, for practicing sorcery. You go live with him. No one's allowed to see this guy.
Or they'll get
excommunicated. He lives in a castle, like a little like turret on the top of a hill.
According to him and the guy at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
the guy who brings him to the place.
Yeah. Yeah, the word is you can't look at this guy. You know, if you see him at all, you'll be excommunicated by the church.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we do find out later on that like there's a lot of rules and stuff around this situation that are maybe not true rules.
Yeah.
Maybe were made up by the people with their own interests in mind. In any case, the guy's an old man. He lives... How many books are in this place?
All of them.
One book. The rest are just wooden...
That's true. Actually, no, there are at least... Four books,
there's
because
four
we see
books,
him
right.
bring three loose books to the guy.
He's in this, it's a gigantic library. It's pretty cool. It's like a tower. It goes straight up, and it's just a library.
Mm-hmm.
The books are clearly fake books. Now, when you saw this in 1996, you wouldn't have noticed that.
I also think if you saw this as a normal person in a normal setting with normal people, you also wouldn't have noticed this.
Right.
But we're not.
We're not. And plus, we're sitting up close and we're looking and...
Our purpose is to pick apart the movie piece by piece.
But it's cool set design.
It's really
And in
cool.
any case, his job is to bring this guy books when he needs them. This guy's old. He's not confined to bed, but he's kind of weak.
Mm-hmm.
And he's replacing the personal secretary of this Monsignor who has recently died. A man named...
Nario.
Who is a guy who died.
Mm-hmm.
We learn a lot of things about this guy who died. Nario, he was a bit of a fop, bit of a ladies' man. In his younger days, he...
Kind of. Okay. He had a job escorting women to, like, balls and stuff.
Right. He was a handsome man.
But from the way it was described, it didn't sound like he liked doing it.
It is his job. Yeah, it's work. And that's why they call it work. It's work. Yeah, well, how much fun is it to hanging out with ladies? Not very. He'd rather be at home with the sorcerer. In any case, he also may have murdered two women or something.
He did.
He also may have been practicing evil or something.
He
we
was.
Don't know. But
there's no if he...
His
no...
body is dead, presumably, and
his
it's...
Body is
there's
dead.
A corpse in the house and that our young hero has to bury in the very beginning. Word on the street is... He's not allowed to be buried in consecrated ground because of all the evil things he did, apparently, when he was alive. So they bury him in the front yard and put a little cross on him. That's the basic setup. Now his job is to just hang out with this guy who's called the Arcane Sorcerer because of the church. What's the church called him? L'Arcano Incantatore. This guy who got this Monsignor who dabbled in the dark arts. And
defrocked priest, that's what they call him.
And apparently, for a while, he and this guy, the two main characters, they have a pretty good budship going on. They're pretty
kind
good
of.
Buds.
They seem really awkward together.
They're awkward together, but like, there seems... The Arcane Sorcerer is not gross and weird.
No.
He's not
he's
malevolent.
He's just a normal guy.
He's just a normal old man. And he's like, I don't practice magic, I practice poetry. This isn't. There's nothing wrong with this. I'm just trying to contact the dead.
I practice magic. I practice poetry.
I practice
except for
poetry.
When I practice magic to contact the dead.
Listen, isn't poetry in its own way more evil than magic? I mean, come on.
No.
I've known poets evil to a T. So
most
poets
magic
are
most
evil.
Magic is written like poetry.
Right. Well, what he's saying is that his magic isn't like the dark arts. It's like the sort of poetical thing where he communes with nature. Also, the house is haunted by ghosts, and he's trying to contact the spirit of a dead guy.
No, he's not. He's trying to contact... He said when he was a kid, there was a guy that he met who started teaching him sorcery stuff. And the guy's astral projecting himself to the place.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah. Right.
He's not trying to contact a dead guy, because that would be ridiculous.
He's communing with someone who lives somewhere else. And
because that would be too close to the truth.
There are things in this movie I didn't quite... Okay, so there's a twist in this movie that... The twist makes me not quite understand everything that's going on, but it's also a pretty cool twist, and it made us both go,
So, okay... Before we get to that.
Right.
There's a whole middle part of the movie.
There's a middle part of the movie. There's the movie part of the movie.
I'm going to say right now, this movie was really straightforward the entire time until the very end.
I'm going to say right now that the twist and then the end, the movie seemed very straightforward to me, but then with the knowledge of the twist, some of it's been opaqued for me. I'm like, okay, well then...
I still think it's pretty straightforward.
Okay. Well, there's also this group of nuns...
Yeah.
Is it nuns? I couldn't tell if they were nuns or just
they're
like...
They're lay sisters.
Lay sisters.
They haven't taken... I don't think they've taken their...
Cool, which is why they are horny AF.
Kind of.
They say that they are, but you don't really get to see it.
The only person who says that is the arcane sorcerer.
That's true. But they don't have to worry about it because
He only says that about Nerio. He only says, oh, those sisters were always trying to sleep with Nerio, which, as we know because of the twist, is just him stroking his own ego.
There's also a sex worker who lives in a hut. She has syphilis, apparently. Everyone says she has syphilis. We don't know if she has syphilis. She seems to be doing okay.
No, she does not.
She's a little forward.
She also doesn't seem to be doing okay.
But it is her job. Like,
she seems like she's really unhappy.
She doesn't seem happy, but she just lives by a bunch of lay sisters. She has one client, and he just apparently died. Right. So, of course she's going to be like, I'm going to throw myself on the ground, I'm going to open up my legs, and I'm going to invite this guy inside, because I need, like, lunch. I need to eat.
And he's like, well, what is he going to pay with? He's not getting paid with money.
Oh, she doesn't know that, though.
But she should if the only
last guy who worked for this guy came to see her and paid.
She also said that she introduced the two girls to Nerio.
Right.
So...
Is it Dario? I don't think it's Dario.
No, Nerio? It's Nerio.
You just said Dario.
No,
you're thinking of Dario Argento.
I'm not. I didn't.
Everyone's
say
favorite Italian. So yes. So he also our hero keeps seeing the ghosts of two young women.
Yes, and two lay sisters.
Because they're dressed like the lay sisters, mm-hmm. And he's heard that there are two lay sisters who disappear, and he's like, oh, I think I keep seeing their ghosts.
And everyone's like, that's ridiculous. And
right.
He's like, with everything else you've told me, how is that the ridiculous
thing? Yeah, they're like, that couldn't be happy. He's like, no, they could possibly... They're like, they just ran away. He's like, no, I think they died, and I think that they're the ghosts that are haunting the area where I live.
Even then, because the woman said, like, the lay sister that he kept talking to, not the one in the boat, but the other one, even said, yeah, Nerio confessed that he murdered them with a pickaxe to me. And
well,
he's like,
he made a joke. He joked that he murdered them with a pickaxe.
To scare me.
And to scare me.
I don't think he was joking.
Yeah, I think that may have been true. Also, there's a ghost, like, there's this whole ritual that he and the arcane sorcerer end up performing. The arcane sorcerer lays in a bed of snow, or ice?
It's like dirt and snow, because the snow, the like cold makes you weaker.
Mm-hmm.
The dirt, because why not?
He bleeds into a bowl.
And then a big old bat.
Big bat puppet shows up and drinks from the blood bowl.
And it's his soul.
Do we know that yet?
No, but we were told that the evil man, or what, the evil one,
mm-hmm.
Like his vessel or whatever, has a bat instead of a soul.
Yes. So.
Soul.
Oh. Saul. Edgar Allan Poe.
Pole.
Mm. You're supposed to say, that was the joke from 17 years ago when we did the Edgar Allan Poe episode. So, he does all this, and they spread flour all over the floor to summon a spirit.
And to see it, they don't spread the flour on the floor to summon the spirit.
Well, no,
they
no,
spread
no,
the flour on the floor to find the spirit.
To find the spirit, which floats, so it doesn't walk through the flour.
No, it just looks like a bunch of Christmas lights.
Yeah, it's a bad special effect. It's not the best special
effect. You know what?
Effect.
It's 1965.
It's not 1965.
It's not It's 1996.
This post-Jurassic Park.
1996.
We have been to the theater and seen living dinosaurs on
screen. I was
screen.
Trying not to say five, so I said six too early, and then I said five anyway.
I feel it's 1965. Fine. But no, it's a pretty wonky special effect, but he's kind of freaked out by it. He goes and he wakes the guy up.
I'd be freaked out if I saw it in real life.
This is where I'm like, who was that? Who was that spirit?
I think that was the arcane sorcerer.
You think that was the arcane sorcerer?
Well, who else would it be?
Well, I don't know.
Well, because, okay.
So what happens? We need to get this out.
Okay, so sees the ghost, goes to wake up the man, wakes up the man, the man's not doing well. I can't remember exactly how this part plays out, but he goes somewhere.
Well, a priest shows up at the house.
Right.
A confessor priest for the lay sisters.
Is that that night?
Well, yeah, it's close enough. Just to know there's a priest who's come to town to be the confessor for the lay sisters, but he's secretly investigating the arcane sorcerer. The arcane sorcerer has been sending messages to someone, mm-hmm. coded messages that he uses. They each have a little book that he uses a cipher. No one's allowed to see this book, so you don't know what it is. He's already talked about a book previously that this guy, that his old assistant brought to him, that he threw in the fire and burned because it was a book on how to summon demons.
Okay, so
any case,
the confessor shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Our boy is coming back from somewhere, sees him, recognizes him, reports this to the arcane sorcerer, and that night the priest is at the door, and he's like, hey, I don't want you getting caught up in all of this, and honestly, if you help us out with this, you are forgiven. You're
right.
Going to be fine. We just need to be able to read those letters that he's been sending, because since the old assistant died, we haven't been able to, because apparently Nerio was decoding the letters for them.
Right, and we know that he's sending these letters to, like, a senator? Like,
yeah.
Someone in high authority.
There's a woman as well. I can't remember her name.
Yeah, she works with the lay sisters. She's
but
the lay sister.
She really believes that the arcane sorcerer is just a good guy, that he was, like, put in these, like, the church was jealous of him,
mm-hmm.
made him out to be some horrible person, sent him to be in, like, live in solitude, and she's like, She's the one who delivers the letters. But,
right. And we are inclined to believe this because it's during the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the confessor priest who shows up was an Inquisition confessor priest.
Yep.
And we're inclined to the arcane sorcerer seems like a nice enough guy. He makes a lot of sense. And it's the church. And they are positioned as the enemy of mm-hmm. the protagonist.
But when Mr. Priestman shows up, he's really, like, chill.
Yeah,
he's
like,
just like, we really just need to know what these letters are because blah, blah, blah. We're worried, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? That could be some master manipulation there.
But he seems sincere.
Yeah, and honestly, if I was in I never knew the main character's name. If I was in Mr. Main Character's shoes, and I was like, I could be accepted back into society and not have to worry about not wanting to sleep with people ever again.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, at that point, the arcane sorcerer was just, like, a nice guy.
Right.
And what would happen to him would probably be worse. I don't know if I could live with that on my conscience either, so.
So, at some point, he talks to the older priest who is with the nuns. And he's like, yada, yada, yada. You wouldn't let them bury the old assistant in the hallowed ground. So that's why we had to bury him in the yard. And the guy's like, what are you talking about? I never said that.
Yeah, it was specific, like, we got a letter after he died that said he was going to be buried on the ground of
yes.
the whatever.
Bearing in mind, again, no one has ever seen the arcane sorcerer. No,
no.
One's ever seen this Monsignor. You're not allowed to, apparently, because you'll be excommunicated.
But somebody has seen him because they knew it wasn't him when they unveiled. Like, they knew.
Right, well,
no,
so what happens
Nerio. Is they've seen Nerio, that's what
yes,
it is.
Yes, people have seen Nerio.
Mm-hmm.
He's around. So he goes back to the place. Stuff happens. He digs up the body, drags it to the priest, they lay it out. Oh, and then he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
They lay it out because they're going to perform an exorcism on it to get rid of the demon inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And they pull back the cloth on the dead body, and lo and behold, it's not the guy. It's
Mr. Man with no hand.
Oh, yeah. So, and also, the Monsignor is missing a hand. That's
mm-hmm.
kind of important. And so the whole movie, he has this sort of, like, fake hand glove on. And when they reveal the dead body, that was buried in the front yard, it's a guy with no hand. We've also seen his ghost before.
Yeah.
He has freaky eyes. He's a freaky looking guy, and he's missing a hand, and they're like, this isn't Nero or Mario or whatever his name
is.
His
name's Nero.
This isn't him. And again, no one's ever seen the Arcane Sorcerer, so they don't say that. They're just like, this isn't the guy. We know what that guy looks like. He's down here all the time. This is some freaky weird guy with bulging eyes and no hand. What's the twist?
Nero is actually the guy, which makes sense, like, looking back on it, and I think makes things even more straightforward.
So, who was Nero? So this whole time, the Arcane Sorcerer was actually his assistant, who killed him, I guess?
Yeah, well, I'm going to do my own breakdown now.
Do your own breakdown.
So, at the beginning of the movie, we have, well, not the very beginning, because that's not important. It's, the very beginning is functionally inconsequential to the movie. it's one of my only problems with it. We get the guy and we get the, like, groundskeeper or whatever. They are loading. They're talking. They're chatting about what's going on. We get sort of a vibe from this guy about Nero, but not a lot about the Arcane Sorcerer, just about Nero. They grab the body.
Okay, my camera does that every once in a while.
They grab the body. They're going to bury him. The main character is warned not to touch the body because it could infect him with ghost or whatever.
With ghosts.
And so they bury him, put on a cross, Mr. Groundskeeper leaves, Mr. main character goes into the house, goes upstairs and gets, like, sees a bunch of, like, stuff that belonged to Nero, and finds a few pieces of paper hidden in a candle box. He gets the paper, and it details this ritual that involves bringing someone back from the dead.
Right.
Which is from, as we learn later on, the book of whatever.
Yeah.
And so he... There's foreshadowing there, because we see the Arcane Sorcerer later on in the movie. We see him doing the ritual over the grounds.
Right, right.
Which... if he had been telling the truth about having burned the book, he wouldn't have been able to, he wouldn't have known what the ritual was.
Right.
And since that, we at that point didn't know that he had a copy of the book, that means that the only person who could have known that would have had to have been Nero, because he's the only one who had access to it.
Right, right.
So we know that the dead body is the Arcane Sorcerer, and that Nero is trying to bring the Arcane Sorcerer back from the dead. Whether it's because the guy accidentally died or just died of old age or whatever, we don't know why he died, whether Nero killed him or not. We didn't see any, like, wounds or anything on the guy's body that would indicate that.
That's true.
And it did seem like, given how Nero spoke about the Arcane Sorcerer when he was pretending to be him, it did seem like he liked the guy. He got him a copy of the demon book.
Right.
We get some stuff about him sending off letters. He's still, I think, still sending them to that senator.
Yeah.
Because the priest guy, still says that that's where they're going.
Right.
So I think it might have just been Nero messing with the people he knew were...
or trying to keep up the facade.
They're trying to keep up the facade, yeah, because... the senator guy wasn't going to have a copy of the book. Because
he only switched places with the sorcerer like a few days ago.
Yeah.
Like, this happens, yeah, because he gets called in to do that. The body is still there. It's not rotted.
Yeah.
It's wrapped up, but that's to keep people from seeing that it's not actually the assistant.
And I think the movie's pretty straightforward. I think this guy is just in a pact with the devil and is trying to bring back a guy from the dead.
So who was the floating spirit?
I think that was the Arcane Sorcerer.
Okay.
I think it was meant to be sort of every time that Nero did this, the spirit got more powerful.
Okay.
Which is why at the end there we see a full body apparition of just the guy.
That makes sense. Because the Arcane Sorcerer is getting weaker and weaker throughout the course of the film.
I wouldn't say Arcane Sorcerer in quotation marks, because he is the Arcane Sorcerer.
No, but he's not, because the Arcane Sorcerer is dead.
That guy is called the Arcane Sorcerer, but this guy actually is the Arcane Sorcerer.
Well, and regardless, you also find out that Nero is the old woman from the beginning.
Yeah.
Who's behind the fresco.
Okay, so we see... before that, though... before that, we learned that Nerio was suspected of killing two women. He visited the prostitute a lot, and she said, when we hear from her, I introduced him to these two girls. He spun some tales about, like, his glory days of taking women to balls and stuff and did whatever. And at the end, we don't find, the main character goes upstairs to let the arcane sorcerer know that, hey, I've dealt with the problem, everything's fine now. And he finds the door that's been locked from the inside in the attic, busted open. And there's two corpses in the bed, it's two women, which is interesting because it's locked from the inside.
Right.
Which means that they might have locked themselves in there.
Yeah.
And their ghosts, we hear them at one point, they talk about, like, dying of love.
Yeah.
Which is effed up. I really, like, it's effed up. And Nerio is in the corner, he acts all remorseful about everything, he's like, oh, it turns out Nerio did commit these crimes, I've been living with two corpses this whole time, and then our main character, for some stupid reason, goes, you can't fool me. I don't know. Why do characters in movies do that?
Yeah, I'm going to tell everyone.
Why would you do that to the man, the arcane, like, the man who is clearly...
Well, and he knows that it's not the arcane sorcerer because how does he figure it out?
He found the book in the bed.
That's right.
The Book of Demons.
That's right. And they get he gets chased... Mm-hmm. Through the house.
He doesn't get chased through the house. He gets chased through one room.
Well, the house is essentially one room.
It's the attic. He gets chased with a guy who's building a pickaxe from the attic.
He gets who's Johnny'd. Here's Johnny'd.
He also lays down on the body of the dead priest who's also in the house. Because the guy has killed the priest.
The guy's killed the priest. And then he shuts himself in a room and Nerio just jack. Torrance is down the door and even looks through the little crack in the hole, busts the door open, but unlike in The Shining, he then dies.
Yep.
he's overexerted himself. He just dies.
I think he had syphilis.
He dies, and that's when he pulls the guy's glove off.
And it's the hand of the woman from the beginning.
It's the hand of the woman from the beginning.
Which brings into the question of what is happening.
Oh, that's what it was. He saw the guy have a gloved hand that moved earlier. Yeah. And that's when he was like, wait a minute, you're definitely not the arcane sorcerer because you're not actually missing a hand.
So everything was really, really straightforward for me up until that point.
Okay.
Because now I don't understand what they're implying with that.
That this guy went to this place or also worked at this place.
But he can't have, because he went... What confused me was that the woman who our main character went to go see at the very end says, oh, there's no room with all the frescoes. There's no frescoed room.
Oh, I see.
Which means that either this guy just hallucinated the whole thing at the very beginning, or nothing.
Or nothing. Yeah, it's... There's a lot... Actually, there's a lot of unanswered questions in this story. I mean, just the two corpses in the attic, as you brought up. There's a lot of just... It's weird. And it ends with, you know, our guy going to this place to try to get... He's like, look, I did what you asked me to do. Our deal is over. And then Nerio shows up
in, like, the graveyard,
his ghost, and is like, you're still bound to me forever.
Which, okay, I don't think the women in the attic are that much of a mystery. I think there's a lot of implications drawn, like, dropped throughout the whole movie of what was going on, just with the way they were introduced to him by the prostitute, the way that he spoke about them when he was talking as the arcane sorcerer, the way that the lay sisters were spoken about, and what they were saying when they died, or when they were, like, dying, and the fact that they locked themselves together in a bedroom and probably starved to death as well. Like, I think that...
What do you think is obvious about all that?
I think it's obvious that he kidnapped these women and held them prisoner in the house.
Why'd they lock themselves in the attic?
Probably because they were scared of him.
All right, we'll go with that. I find the movie to be very... It doesn't oversell its points. It's just like you're sort of with this guy experiencing what he's experiencing as he's experiencing it. It only changes perspective that one time when you're in the attic with the dead body. But very effective film. Like,
I thought it was really effective. I didn't like the end.
You didn't like the end, but I thought the movie itself was pretty... Like, I can see... Well, I can see why Guillermo del Toro likes it.
Yes, definitely.
But you know what?
What?
We don't even have to wonder why Guillermo del Toro
likes it. No, we have a really long article about why he likes it.
Guillermo del Toro contributed to a book in 2013 mm-hmm. called The Best Film You've Never Seen. Published by Chicago Review Press, 2013. And an excerpt from that book is on RogerEbert.com. And it's an interview with Guillermo del Toro about the Arcane Sorcerer. And this movie, like, changed Guillermo del Toro's mm-hmm. life. Like us, he had trouble getting his hands on it.
Yep.
He had to watch a very degraded copy of it. But he talks about how it became incredibly, he says, it became incredibly important for me in doing Devil's Backbone. This idea that you can be pastoral in the landscape and imbue the movie with great horror nevertheless. I love how Avadi fuses the sounds of nature with the soundtrack, the cicadas and the crickets and the birds, until they become a source of mystery like they would have been at the time. The sounds of nature become the force of elemental creatures. He also talks about how he personally collects old grimoires mm-hmm. and witchcraft books and occult literature. And he has a nice library, and it's incredible how close this movie comes to feeling like a true undocumented account of how this story would have happened in the time. Incredibly deep knowledge of the occult, Avadi has an uncanny ear for the tone of this type of story, and it's amazing. Del Toro loves this movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
And watching this, and we sort of, we read through this interview, we didn't get any spoilers, but before we watched the movie, we were reading through the interview. And watching the movie with the knowledge of the influence it had on Devil's Backbone, I'm like, yeah, there are moments in this movie that feel like Devil's Backbone, that have that, like, just sort of like, it's a small town. It's sad. There's like a sort of inherent melancholy about the whole thing. There's mysterious stuff going on, but there's also just life going on. The presence of ghosts, like the way the ghosts just sort of show up. And are there, and then they're gone, is very much like in Devil's Backbone.
I think the most effective part of this movie, horror-wise, for me, was the two ghosts of the two women.
Yeah, again, it's not a scary movie.
No.
It's definitely horror.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's very folk horror, magic horror, Catholic horror.
Gothic.
Yeah, it's gothic, as he says, it's hard to come by. But Del Toro, you can find this interview. It's on RogerEbert.com. He talks a lot about the way it's very religious and magical at the same time. Like how Catholicism is kind of like, yeah, this is the one you want to be a part of. Del Toro's grandmother performed an exorcism on him
twice.
Once. Famously, yes.
She did twice.
Because of all the evil books and movies that he entertained himself with. So he's familiar with this world. And I grew up somewhat familiar with the world of arcane magic because my grandmother was a deep believer in Santeria. She didn't practice her of Santeria. Forget it. But she was a deep believer in the power of it, the dark magic of, which is, I believe Santeria is a corruption of the Catholic faith, where they took the saints and combined them with the demons and created this whole new Christian Catholic witchcraft faith that people do practice in Mexico and in Texas. And you would bring up certain things and she and my aunt would be like, oh yeah, that's Santeria. That person is possessed. That that's Santeria. And it's that thing. It's that, yeah, there's that. We say it when we're watching the movie. Like, Catholicism especially is very much a magical belief. Like, it's got its arcana and its spells and its rituals.
I find it fascinating mostly because every time I see a horror movie about Catholicism, it's really heavily criticizing Catholic shame.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it's a pro-Catholic movie.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because when I hear people talk about, like, they get that sort of feeling that, like, guilt is, like, what that is all about.
Right.
So it's just weird that so much of Catholic horror talks about how easy it is to prey on the shame.
Right. Well, yeah. Because that's a lot of what the Catholic Church does.
Is, yeah.
Yeah.
I was raised by two atheists.
Right.
One of whom... went to Catholic school.
Right.
Didn't like it for obvious reasons. So I didn't grow up with a lot of this kind of stuff.
No.
Pretty much didn't have any exposure to any kind of religion when I was a kid. Even just with, like, friends and stuff. I mean, I had neighbors who were Christian, but the only thing I remember about that was being told I was going to go to hell after they came back from church camp.
Mm-hmm.
And not being allowed to say "God damn it" in front of them. That's it.
Which, you know, with kids, it's probably a smart thing to not have kids say in front of their friends.
Oh my God is what it was.
That makes more sense. I was like, yeah. That makes sense to me. Del Toro's in the interview, he says he doesn't believe there's such thing as forbidden knowledge as long as it comes with a spiritual component. What I don't like is knowledge that is purely, purely intellectual, because that distances us from nature. I love the idea that knowledge can make us closer to the world as opposed to making us feel superior to the world. And I think that's where Del Toro comes out, where this movie comes out. Like, the magic would be fine if the guy wasn't trying to become like a master necromancer, wizard, whatever he was trying to do. Also, wasn't a child murderer or woman murderer.
Yeah.
That's also a problem.
It feels okay. The magic in this movie felt secondary to everything else that was happening.
Yeah.
Because, sure, magic, whatever. The real issue was the fact that this guy was deranged and creepy and murdered two
women.
So, at least two women.
At least two women, which, yes. And that is very similar to the previous Avadi films I saw, where there's a lot of weird, creepy stuff going on in the town. There's some mysterious characters. There's a lot of colorful citizens and denizens of the area. But when it comes down to it, is who is killing these people is, in, I believe, in both movies. It's like, who is most... this movie could have had nothing to do with magic, and there still would have been a mystery as to who murdered these two lay sisters and hid their bodies in the attic. And I think at the end of the day, that's the evil.
Yeah.
Like, there's the evil. It was a serial killer.
Yep.
Yes, there's magic, but there's also this guy who was a serial killer, and then he took over the position. He found the perfect hiding spot, which is be the guy who no one's allowed to see.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have lived out his life that way, but he got too smart for his own good. He wasn't a good guy. Edgar Wright, the director of Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Scott Pilgrim, described this movie as the Barry Lyndon of horror movies.
I don't know what that means because I don't remember
Barry absolutely Lyndon. Remember what that means. Barry Lyndon, lit almost entirely by candlelight. Barry Lyndon.
Don't tell me how the movie looked. Tell me what it was about.
Well, no, that was one of the, Barry Lyndon. It was the really long one. It had
About the guy who started out in the village?
He
was a sad sack, and then he became back, and he was still a sad sack.
And he ended up making a lot of money, and he married a woman with a lot of money, and their little boy died, and they had to be pulled by the sheep.
Yeah.
Or the dogs. Okay. Yes. The Barry Lyndon of horror movies, in that it's, I believe, just the set design, the lighting, the sort of like paced, slow nature of it.
It got a little bit dark, not thematically, but lighting-wise. It got a little bit dark sometimes. I couldn't really tell what was
happening. It was a little dark. That could have just been the transfer.
That could have just...
Again,
not a criticism of the movie. A criticism of... Actually, it was also kind of the light back there, but...
He talks about the difference between watching The Exorcist and being the subject of an exorcism. He says his grandmother was no pro, but she was an enthusiastic amateur. It didn't take... That's about mentorship. I'd go read this interview. It's very long and very good.
Wait, go back up. You've often mentioned... Did we see Flesh and Blood?
We did not see Paul Verhoeven's Flesh and Blood. He says there's a link between this movie and that movie. Middle Ages. The transition from the Age of Darkness to the Age of Reason. They ask him... You know, why do we as viewers find, you know, the hidden and the obscure so compelling? And Guillermo del Toro was like, the same reason we like hide and seek and we love chases. One is the thrill of not knowing and one is the thrill of knowing and experiencing. They're both fundamental columns of human narrative, to tease with a mystery or to pursue with action.
I feel like for me, it's not knowing something really annoys me rather than thrills me. And I'm like, I need to know what's going on or I'm going to be really annoyed.
And this is the quote that we love. He says, the deepest horror is the one that deals with the worst kind of things. When you're dealing with somebody that may die or be maimed, you can always have the possibility of survival. There's always that part of you that says, well, if I lose an arm, I can always have the other one. Ha ha ha. well, if the monster tears up my leg, I can always have a prosthetic one made or something. But when you're dealing with the soul, there is no solution to that. There are no prosthetics for the soul. A bat.
A bat is the prosthetic for the soul.
A bat is your soul prosthetic. It's a terrible puppet bat, but as we said,
not terrible.
Not the worst puppet bat we've seen.
That was in Black Sunday.
Black Sunday.
Yep.
The worst bat ever put on film, but also
the best
bat ever put on film. This bat
was pretty good.
It was a little puppet, and it did like drink the blood.
It had pretty good wings. The other bat kind of just looked like they threw a Halloween decoration at the camera.
They threw a Halloween decoration at the camera. I honestly think it scared the camera person. So, Arcane Sorcerer.
I really liked it. I criticized the ending a little bit. I would recommend watching this without talking.
Yes.
But we're content creators.
And I think this is a movie that can use a second watch. Mm-hmm. Like, once you know the twist,
it's good going to go back
and watching it. I think when I put this thing together, I'm going to figure some stuff out.
There were a couple of things that still bother me. One, why did they focus so much on that one woman at the lay sister place when she had nothing to do with anything?
There was a lot of that, yes.
I didn't like that at all. It was really annoying. I was like, I don't care about this woman. Two, why did he not, like, was he unable to see what the book was? He was not sitting that far away, and why did he keep dropping the book?
It was very small print, and I think the dropping the book made sense now. I think it made sense because he was trying to pretend he only had one hand.
That makes sense.
I think that's what that
was. Because
he was
like, somebody who hasn't had a hand since childhood is not going to be that incompetent.
And he kept dropping the book, and I'm like, oh, it's because he was trying not to use this hand, and he's not used to doing that. The third thing you didn't like, no sex.
I was really glad.
You were like, where are the butts and the boobs?
I was
the
so
whole
worried.
Time. The
I couldn't
whole
tell
time,
if he actually slept with the prostitute or
the whole time like, you were like, when are we going to see some
bodies
start slapping from doing the wild thing?
No, I like to think he didn't sleep with the prostitute.
Oh, I don't think he did. They kept telling him she had syphilis.
That's true.
Like,
did
I don't
care
how hard. What?
Did they care back
yes,
then?
Yes, everyone. Syphilis was like the worst thing you could get. The sun.
The sun.
The sun.
That makes no sense to anybody else.
It's the end of Henrik Ibsen's Ghost. The guy dies of syphilis. And he dies saying the
she
sun.
Supposedly had syphilis.
But he still wouldn't do it. He wouldn't. Why take the risk?
Yeah, also because his whole thing was he slept with a woman and then forced her to get divorced.
And things went bad.
Also, that is really just a rough way to start off making your main character.
But I think that was smart.
Yeah.
I think it's like, okay, we're not dealing with some innocent guy here. Mm-hmm. We're not dealing with, like, the greatest guy in the world. He's not, you know, like, running off with the woman either. Like, I'm sure she's not having a good time.
No.
Knowing that she got pregnant and then had an abortion in, like,
1800s.
Right. I'm sure she is not having the best time
not
in the world.
1700s.
And he just runs off.
The Inquisition was not in the 1700s.
Right. No, it's during the Inquisition. But, yes. So, thumbs up to the Arcane Sorcerer. Get your hands on it. Write to Italy and have them send you a disc. I think you can find it other places. I think that streaming and not streaming. I think you can find it some shady places. I bought the DVD. It did not cost much money.
Get the DVD.
It was not very much lira. Yeah, put some lira into Poopy Avati's hands. Huh? The guy's not asking for much.
And you know what? It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Buy a copy of it. You'll have to download your own subtitles. Unless you speak Italian. Willow, what is the next movie on The Ecstasy of Influence? I'll give you a hint. I was watching it when I found out about 9/11. I was watching it.
I have no idea.
Hint number two. You were 6 days old when I was watching it.
That doesn't help at all.
Next time on The Ecstasy of Influence, almost The Arcane Sorcerer.
Next time on The Arcane Sorcerer.
Satoshi Kon's Perfect Blue.
It's
right there, in case you're interested.
It's going to be really depressing.
It's a bizarre psycho thriller,
okay,
crime weirdness movie.
I can do that.
Perfect Blue, an anime. Anime from the land of Japan. I was watching it. In the middle of it, my sister called and was like, I want to know how you guys are doing. And your mom was like, oh, you know how it is. We have a new kid in the house, a new baby. It's just, oh, who can sleep? And my sister was like, no, I mean about America being under attack. And I was like, let me pause this anime I have on. What are you talking about? And that's how I found out about 9/11. So you, Satoshi Kon, Perfect Blue, 9/11, just intricately intertwined in my head. And I've never finished the movie.
Well, now we can.
I could never bring myself
hopefully
to watch it again.
There's not another terror attack on United States soil while we're watching this movie next
We'll try to watch it before the election.
We're going to be watching it after the election, aren't we?
Hopefully there's not a terrorist attack going on America's soil while we're watching Perfect Blue. In the meantime, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when it's Del Toro time.